So I've been fortunate in my life to have not experienced a really powerful earthquake. I've some smaller ones here and there, but we know that every once in a while in our world, there is one of these really strong earthquakes, and we see the pictures and the images that come and the devastation that they bring. It's interesting to me, and maybe you've noticed this too, that sometimes when you see those pictures of, let's say a city block where there's been an earthquake, and in this city block, 80 to 90% of the buildings have been reduced to rubble and have fallen down. But then there's that one building, or maybe that those two buildings that were able to withstand the shaking and stay upright. And it looks like, at least from a bit of a distance, that they look fine. Everything else crumbled around them, but yet they were able to withstand their integrity. Why is that? Well, you know, it could be because of superior building materials or building strategy or earthquake preparation in the building process. But what we see in that is that when everything shakes, the quality of what has been built is revealed. When everything shakes, the quality of what has been built is revealed for all to see. So if we take that out of the realm of earthquakes and we bring it into our lives, how is it possible, or is it possible, to live an unshakable life? That when everything is shaken, to still be standing at the end of it? Well, the end of Hebrews 12 makes it very clear that it is, in fact, possible to have this kind of unshakable life. In fact, I'll summarize it with this statement. An unshakable life can be found only by living in God's unshakable kingdom. An unshakable life can be found only by living in God's unshakable kingdom. And so through some really vivid and dramatic imagery, the pastor in Hebrews brings us some comparing contrast between the without God life and the with God life. A shakable life and an unshakable life. So let's start reading in verse 18 of Hebrews chapter 12. You have not come to a mountain that can be touched, and that is burning with fire, to darkness, gloom, and storm, to a trumpet blast, or to such a voice speaking words that those who heard it begged that no further word be spoken to them, because they could not bear what was commanded. If even an animal touches the mountain, it must be stoned to death. The sight was so terrifying that Moses said, "I'm trembling with fear." But you have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. See to it that you do not refuse him who speaks. If they did not escape when they refused him who warned them on earth, how much less will we if we turn away from him who warns us from heaven? At that time his voice shook the earth, but now he has promised, "Once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens." The words "once more" indicate the removing of what can be shaken, that is, created things, so that what cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we're receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. This really dramatic passage of scripture easily divides into three sections. There's first the mountain of self-sufficiency. Second, there's the mountain of God. And then third, there's a warning and an invitation. So we'll take these things one at a time. You could pick up as we read through that these two mountains that are described are compared and contrasted with one another. The first one is this place of terror, of dread, of fear, and the second one is the opposite, a place of joy and welcome and invitation. So the first one is what I'm calling the mountain of self-sufficiency. It's not called that in the text, but I think that's what it represents for us. It's a very fearful place. All of the language that's used to describe this first mountain is meant to evoke a response of fear, of terror, of I really want to avoid that place. It's kind of like Mount Doom in The Lord of Rings, this mountain covered in fire and smoke, and And this real place of terror, you don't want to go there. This mountain in Hebrews 12, verses 18 to 21, is described in seven ways with seven descriptions. It's a mountain that cannot be touched. It is, secondly, burning with fire. But even though it's burning with fire, number three, it's covered in darkness. Fourth, it's gloomy. Fifth, it's stormy. Sixth and seventh, there's things you can hear. So sixth, you hear a trumpet blast. And seventh, you hear a voice speaking words. That's literally the translation, a voice speaking words. And the words that this voice spoke were terrifying to all that heard them, and they wanted the voice to stop speaking. What is this mountain? What is this place? Why is the pastor bringing us to this place, at least in our minds? Well, it's going to remind us of the Old Testament, which of course our author here has often done throughout Hebrews, brought us back into the Old Testament. And it's going to bring us back to Mount Sinai, but it's not going to bring us back necessarily to one specific point. It's actually going to bring us to a couple of different instances at Mount Sinai. Exodus chapter 19 is the place where there's most direct comparison here. in this instant, the Israelites have been brought out of Egypt. They've been freed from slavery. They've come to Mount Sinai, the mountain of God, and God is going to meet with them there, and he's going to give them the Ten Commandments and then, by extension, the Old Testament law. So this is how this relationship is going to function. This is how you're supposed to relate to a God who is this holy and this powerful. And this is how the scene is set in Exodus chapter 19, starting in verse 10. The Lord said to Moses, "Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. Have them wash their clothes and be ready by the third day, because on that day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in sight of all the people. Put limits for the people around the mountain and tell them, 'Be careful that you do not approach the mountain or touch the foot of it. Whoever touches the mountain is to be put to death. They're to be stoned or shot with arrows. Not a hand is to be laid on them. No person or animal shall be permitted to live. Only when the ram's horn sounds a long blast may they approach the mountain.' After Moses had gone down the mountain to the people, he consecrated them and they washed their clothes. He said to the people, 'Prepare yourselves for the third day. Abstain from sexual relations.' On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning and a thick cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast. Everyone in the camp trembled. Then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. Mount Sinai was covered with smoke because the Lord descended on it with fire. The smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace, and the whole mountain trembled violently. As the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke, and the voice of God answered him. The Lord descended to the top of Mount Sinai and called Moses to the top of the mountain. So Moses went up, and the Lord said to him, 'Go down and warn the people so they don't force their way through to see the Lord, and many of them perish. Even the priests who approach the Lord must consecrate themselves, or the Lord will break out against them.'" And if we jump forward into chapter 20 of Exodus, the Ten Commandments have just been given. And this is the response of the people. "When the people saw the thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain and smoke, they trembled with fear. They stayed at a distance and said to Moses, 'Speak to us yourself and we will listen, but do not have God speak to us or we will die.' Moses said to the people, 'Don't be afraid. God has come to test you, so the fear of God will be with you to keep you from sinning.' The people remained at a distance while Moses approached the thick darkness where God was." Really scary picture, really scary experience for the Israelites back in that time as they approach the power and the holiness of God and recognize just how weak and unholy they were in comparison with Him. Now, there are some people who look then into Hebrews 12 and these two mountains, and they say that the first mountain actually represents the old covenant, the old law, the Old Testament law and all that it represents. And the second mountain actually represents the new covenant that God has put in place with his people through Jesus. Now, there is some elements of compare and contrast in that way, but I think that's actually too simplistic of an understanding of what's going on here. First, because the old covenant is in Hebrews has been described as finished. It's done. It's completed its purpose, and there's no reason for us to go back to it. But it's never described as something that is terrifying produces such abject horror as what we see in Exodus chapter 19. It's not described that way. And in the Old Testament law is described as a beautiful thing, not as a terrifying thing. So there's a few details in Hebrews chapter 12 here that give us the sense that something greater is going on here than a simple old versus new comparison in these two mountains. The first is this. If you read in the Greek in Hebrews 12 to describe this first mountain, the name of God is never used, the name Sinai is never used, and the word mountain is never actually used. Now in English, we are provided with the word mountain. You have not come to a mountain that can be touched. In the Greek is you have not come to that which can be touched. The word mountain is not even used. So if the author wanted to strengthen the connection between Sinai and the Old Covenant, he very easily could have, but he actually speaks in a little bit more of a vague and general way. This description also is meant to be terrifying. And the Old Testament law, like I said, is never described in this way. The terrifying aspect is brought up as our senses are appealed to, our senses of touch and sight and hearing. And in fact, the most terrible sign of all of these descriptions is the very last one. It's a sound, the voice of words that is speaking that produced terror in the people. We also learn in this passage that even Moses was afraid. But if you remember when we read Exodus 19 and 20, Moses wasn't afraid. The people were afraid, but Moses actually was called into the dark cloud to visit with God. And God spoke with Moses face to face as a man speaks with his friends. And later in Exodus, Moses actually asks God, "Can I see your glory?" And God says to him, "If you saw the fullness of my glory, you surely would die, but you can see my back, and that will be enough for you." So Moses is actually not afraid in this story, but Hebrews tells us that Moses was afraid. Well, there is one moment later on in the story where Moses is afraid. Actually, we read it in Deuteronomy chapter 9. Moses has been up on the mountain with God, and he comes down the mountain, and what does he find? He finds the people worshiping a golden calf that they had made. They had basically rebelled against God immediately after this interaction at the mountain. And they said, we're gonna follow our own gods, we're gonna make an idol, we're going to be self-sufficient in this world. We don't need God, and we don't know what's happened to Moses. He's been up on that mountain forever. And so Moses comes down, and then we find out that Moses is afraid. Why is he afraid? Because the people have deliberately sinned against the holiness of God. And that is a place of great fear. And Moses understands this because he's been in the presence of God. The people have sinned against him, and therefore Moses is afraid. This is what this first mountain is representing. It's the without God life, the rebellion against the holiness of God. Gareth Cockrell says this, "The terror of the people and the dread of Moses make it clear that this is fear before the awesome judgment of God upon sin." Being in this place of sin should produce this